Chapter 9. The Power of Gone. And until you know of this, how to grow through death, you're just another grumpy guest on the gloomy earth. Goethe, Holy Longing. Shinzen Young, translator. Students sometimes ask me whether there is a quickest path to enlightenment. My standard answer is that there may be, but I don't think that humanity knows it yet. In our current stage of the science of enlightenment, different approaches seem to work for different people. That's why I like to give a wide range of contrasting techniques for students to choose from. However, just as a thought experiment, I have sometimes asked myself what I would say if I were allowed to teach only one focus technique and no other. Which technique would I pick as the quickest path to enlightenment? It's a difficult choice, but I think it would be the technique I call just note gone. Most people are aware of the moment when a sensory event starts, but are seldom aware of the moment when it vanishes. We are instantly drawn to a new sound, or new sight, or a new body sensation, but rarely notice when the previous sound, sight, or body sensation disappears. This is natural, because each new arising of sensory experience represents what we need to deal with in the next moment. But to always be aware of sensory arisings, and hardly ever be aware of sensory passings, creates an unbalanced view of the nature of sensory experience. It also causes us to miss one of the more interesting ways to contact the source. Practicing just note gone is pretty straightforward. Whenever a sensory experience suddenly disappears, make a note of that fact. Clearly acknowledge when you detect the transition point between all of it being present and at least some of it no longer being present. You can use the mental label gone to help you note the end of the experience. If nothing vanishes for a while, that's fine. Just hang out until something does. If you start worrying about the fact that nothing is ending, note each time that thought ends. There is only a finite amount of real estate available in consciousness at any given instant. Each arising somewhere causes a passing somewhere else. There's a lot to be said about the passing of sensory experiences. When you first begin, it may be difficult to keep track of what's going on. But with time, you start to clearly track inner and outer sensory activity. At some point, you become very aware that these sensory events not only well up, but that they also subside. And then at a further point, you become more and more interested in how they subside. Your attention is directed toward the passing of things. This classic progression from simply noticing events to riding on a rhythmic pattern of arising passing to fascination with continuous passing is described in the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, the classical Southeast Asian manual for Vipassana practice. I define the moment of vanishing to be when all or part of a sensory experience disappears. It might not be that the whole sensory event goes away, but at least some portion of it abruptly subsides. A gradual fading is not a gone, but will continue to fade and fade, and then at some point there will be a transition from a subtle level of existence to actual non-existence. That moment, when it winks out, is a gone. My simple one-word label for detecting endings is gone. But as with many of the labels I use, we have to be careful, because the meaning is not identical to the meaning in colloquial English. When we say gone in everyday English, it typically implies gone for good. It's gone, and it ain't coming back. But gone as a label in my system of mindfulness merely denotes the situation of detecting an abrupt diminishing. It doesn't mean that what ended won't come back. In fact, it may come back instantly. Also, gone does not imply that every part of a sensory experience has vanished. Let's say that you are observing a mental image of a person. There's a head, trunk, arms, legs, and so forth. At some point, maybe the left arm abruptly evaporates, but the rest of the person's image is still there. That is a partial vanishing. Part of what you were observing disappeared. That counts as a gone. So gone does not imply gone for good. Gone doesn't mean that every single part of what you're observing disappears. It means that all or part of something suddenly subsides. And it doesn't even have to subside all the way. It might just abruptly diminish to a lower level or a smaller size. As I like to define things, flow is any change. Something may change by increasing in some way. Something may change by decreasing in some way. Gone is the label for any abrupt decrease. Put another way, gone is a special case of abrupt flow. The way I define gone in this chapter may seem rather complex and subtle. What's the point? Recall that in Chapter 1, I described how basic scientific definitions are sometimes honed over a long period of time. A modern high school student, if they're willing to be patient with their textbook, can have an understanding of calculus that is deeper than that of its genius creators, Newton and Leibniz. It took me 20 years to hone my current definition of gone. With it, a beginning meditator can sometimes get a taste of the stage that, according to the Visuddhimagga, immediately precedes enlightenment. One might say that the moment of arising represents nature affirming a sensory event, metaphorically saying yes to it. Paralleling this, one might say that the moment of passing is nature negating, metaphorically saying no to that sensory event. To be able to clearly detect gone could be thought of as the ability to experience nature saying no. The ability to appreciate gone goodies, like relief, tranquility, and such, could be thought of as the ability to deeply experience nature's no. There are four factors that facilitate having a clear and deep experience of gone. The totality of your momentary focus, the totality of your momentary equanimity, the quickness of your momentary focus, and the quickness of your momentary equanimity. Here's what I mean. The totality of your focus refers to pouring the whole bucket of your awareness on each new arising. The totality of your equanimity refers to how deeply you open to each new arising. To pour the whole bucket of your awareness on each arising, while simultaneously opening to it, could be described as affirming that arising, saying yes loudly in response to nature's yes. The ability to do those two things at the very instant when something arises could be described as saying yes quickly. This brings us to the basic axiom of noting vanishing. The more quickly and completely you affirm each arising, the deeper and clearer will be your experience of its passing. I've noticed that there's a tendency to assume that gone is a very esoteric category. Often, people think that if they dedicate themselves to meditating on it for 20 years, they may someday become worthy to note a gone. Please disabuse yourself of that notion. Every in-breath comes to an end. Every out-breath comes to an end. Those are physical-type body sensations, and they come to an end. Don't ever say that you can't detect any vanishings. You can find two gones in every breath you take. You might think that such gones are trivial, but they are not. All gones are created equal. Or as I sometimes like to say, all gones are uncreated equal. I say it as a joke. It might seem like an enigmatic and strange way to talk, some kind of gimmick to get your attention or to make it sound like I know something you don't. But all gones are uncreated equal. The thing that vanishes might be quite ordinary and banal. But its moment of vanishing points to something extraordinary and deep, the uncreated, the source of consciousness. You hear a cat meow, and that sound comes to an end. Gone. You turn on a light in a room, and the darkness comes to an end. Gone. A verbal thought goes through your head. You note it, and it vanishes. Gone. You may think that these are too quotidian, too banal to have any significance, but these are all covered by the definition of gone. As you pay attention to these everyday gones, you are gradually, developing a sensitivity, the ability to detect the unborn source of consciousness. Each one of those gones represents a teeny tiny learning that in and of itself would seem rather trivial. But once you begin to sum that learning over many instances, over weeks, months, perhaps years of practice, you start to notice that those moments of gone momentarily direct your attention towards something that's actually not a thing, and therefore can't really be experienced in the senses, but can be contacted. That not thing that you are contacting is the source. The source can be indirectly contacted through the vanishing moment of the senses, even though it itself is not, strictly speaking, an experience. Put another way, the after effect of each vanishing becomes more and more sensorially well-defined. Regarding gone, there are some things that are intuitively obvious, and some things that are actually quite counterintuitive. It's intuitively obvious that if you're having an unpleasant experience in your body and or mind, and you're able to pay attention to the moments when parts of it vanish, you'll get a sense of relief. Noting gone allows you to experience that this too is passing, which will give you a lot more comfort than just trying to remind yourself, "This too shall pass." It also makes sense that noting gone could create stillness and tranquility within you. Relief and tranquility are a natural consequence of the nature of vanishing. They intuitively make sense. But some effects of gone are not intuitively obvious. It's not intuitively obvious that noting the vanishing of a neutral or pleasant experience can result in something delicious, but it can. Indeed, when any sensory experience, whether it's pleasant, painful, or neutral, vanishes, it can potentially leave a sense of satisfaction in its wake. This is hard to explain logically, but can be experienced personally. In India, there's a word that means both cessation and satisfaction as a single linked concept. The word is nirvana. It means to blow out like a candle flame. It also means to quench your thirst in the sense of being completely and totally fulfilled. Where things go to is where things come from. Each time you note gone, for a brief instant your attention is pointed directly toward the richness of the source. That is what's behind the seeming paradox of satisfying nothingness. It is intuitively obvious that noticing vanishings might reverberate through your senses as a restful experience, that as the result of noticing the moment when a burst of talk comes to an end, it might be followed by some quiet. The relative rest states, a blank mental screen, a defocused external gaze, physical relaxation, emotional neutrality, physical silence, mental quiet, may begin to pervade your sensory experience as the result of noticing vanishings. It's also intuitively obvious that if you're going through an uncomfortable experience, focusing on vanishings could bring micro-relief. And it's not a big stretch to imagine that if your ability to continuously focus on goneness is high, those moments of micro-relief might sum to significant relief, macro-relief. It's not intuitively obvious that noting gone would bring fulfillment, but many people over the ages have discovered this, hence the Sanskrit word nirvana. Are there any other counterintuitive gone goodies? Indeed, yes. There is one more major one. Noting gone may lead to a spontaneous spirit of love and service, bodhicitta. As I've said, where sensory events go to is where sensory events arise from. Gone points to the source of your own consciousness. As you come to know the source of your own consciousness, you also come to know the source of everyone's consciousness, the shared, formless womb of all beings. Someone with whom you share a womb is referred to as a brother or sister. So noting gone can lead to a spontaneous sense of oneness with and commitment to all beings. Tibetan teachers like to emphasize the complementary between emptiness and compassion. Goneness, although seemingly cold and impersonal, is deeply connected to the issue of human fulfillment and human caring. This fact is the central mystery of world mysticism. Le coup du vide est l'amour pur. The touch of the void is love itself. Flow and go. As you'll recall, flow is the term I use for any detectable change in your sensory experience. Flow covers a wide range of phenomena. By definition, a given sensory event is either perfectly stable or it's flowing. Any increase or decrease in intensity, frequency, or spatial extent of a sensory event is flow. Any waviness, swirling, or vibration within a sensory event is flow. Some flow is smooth, some flow is sudden, some flow is continuous, some flow is abrupt. Among the various flavors of flow, expansion-contraction flow and subtle vibratory flow are especially significant. Subtle vibratory flow is often quite pleasant, and expansion-contraction flow is fundamental. Subtle vibratory flow is like a shower of effervescence, or a puff of aerosol spray, or a silky homogeneous field of minute scintillations. Runners high and lifters pump, when viewed through the mindfulness microscope, turn out to be subtle vibratory flow. Subtle vibratory flow and gone form a delicious contrast, light and smooth versus dramatic and abrupt. Sometimes a pattern develops wherein the two alternate. Bubble spray, gone, bubble spray, gone, bubble spray, gone. At first, You'll probably be aware of where the subtle vibratory flow is, what's flowing, and so forth. But you may reach a point where the different spaces begin to flow together, and the distinctions are lost. You actually don't care, and don't even know whether the subtle vibratory flow is somatic, visual, or auditory. Those discriminations break down. The separation of subjective versus objective breaks down. The distinction between active states and restful states breaks down. All you're interested in is the bursts of subtle vibratory flow and their vanishings. This homogenizing effect of subtle vibratory flow is very pleasant, but you can't make it happen. It results from a dialectical process. Half of the process involves making discriminations in a healthy, empowering way, that is, separating inner versus outer, active versus restful, visual versus auditory versus somatic. The other half is destroying the discriminations in a healthy, empowering way, which we do in meditating on flow in general and subtle vibratory flow in specific. Subtle vibratory flow is a great leveler that destroys distinctions. An even greater leveler is expansion-contraction flow. Smooth expansion-contraction flow creates time and space. Abrupt contractive flow, gone, destroys time and space. You can't have distinctions without time and space. With the subtle vibrations, you could still, in theory, distinguish the locations of that flow. But the subtle vibratory flow might become so pervasive that you don't know what it is or where it is, or who you are or where you are. When this happens, it means you're getting close to an important figure ground reversal. You are about to become that subtle vibratory flow. Good. Go with that. It's the same with gone. With gone, too, you may reach a point where you don't know what it is that's disappearing. You don't even know whether it is big or small, pleasant or unpleasant, simple or complex. You forget about all those things. You're just dominated by the vanishingness of things. It's just gone, gone, gone. That, once again, leads to a figure ground reversal. You are about to become gone. Good. Go with that. As you become more sensitive to detecting gone, you may come to a place where you note it so frequently that goneness itself becomes an object of high concentration. The gaps between the gones get shorter and shorter until a figure ground reversal takes place. Self and world become fleeting figures, and gone becomes the abiding ground. Needless to say, experiencing that will have a huge impact on how you relate to aging and death. Dissolution. There is one possible negative effect from working with vanishing and the related themes of emptiness and no self. In extreme cases, the sense of goneness, emptiness, and no self may be so intense that it creates disorientation, terror, paralysis, aversion, or hopelessness. Unpleasant reactions such as these are well documented in the classical literature of contemplation of both East and West. In the West, it is sometimes referred to as the dark night of the soul. In the East, it is sometimes referred to as the pit of the void, or dukkhanyana, the unpleasant side of dissolution. This doesn't happen that often, but if it does, there are three interventions which you need to remember in order to transform the situation from problematic to blissful. First, you accentuate the good parts of the dark night, even though they may seem very subtle relative to the bad parts. For example, you may be able to glean some sense of tranquility within the nothingness. There may be some sense of inside and outside becoming one, leading to expanded identity. There may be some soothing vibratory energy massaging you. There may be a springy, expanding, contracting energy animating you. Use your concentration power to focus on these positive aspects of the experience, and it may bring some relief and even enjoyment. Second, negate the negative parts of the dark night by deconstructing them through noting with mindful awareness. Remember the divide and conquer strategy of Vipassana. Experiences that are overwhelming become much less so when they are disentangled into their constituent parts. You simply notice which part of your void-triggered bum-out is emotional body sensation, which part is mental images, and which part is mental talk. Keep those clearly delineated. Another way to put this is, if everything is empty, and that's bumming you out, then constantly remind yourself that the bum out is empty. But you say, that will leave me no place to stand. That's right. That's the whole point. You will become what Zen Master Rinzai called an authentic person with no fixed position. Finally, you try to affirm positive emotions, behaviors, and cognitions in a sustained, systematic way. Gradually, patiently, reconstruct a new habitual self based on loving kindness and related practices, thinking positive, loving thoughts, seeing positive, loving images, and feeling love and positivity all help to palliate dukkha-jnana, the unpleasant perceptions caused by the dissolution. In most cases, all three of these interventions must be practiced and maintained for however long it takes to get through the dark night. In the most extreme cases, it may require ongoing and intensive support from teachers and other practitioners to remind you to keep applying these interventions. The end result, though, will be a depth of joy and freedom beyond your wildest imagining. You'll find a poetic Christian view of dissolution and its challenges and rewards in Chapter 10. Primordial Feel. In my experience as a teacher, intense dark night problems are not very common. Usually, having everything just slipping away into nothingness over and over is tremendously restful and tranquil. But in certain cases, or at certain times, it can actually feel like the opposite of restful and peaceful. It can create emotional agitation. Even though this can be an unpleasant experience, it actually indicates something very powerful happening in your meditation. This emotional agitation is not the dramatic dark night described in the previous section, not at all. But it does have its own challenges and payoffs. Vanishing points us to the most primordial, primitive experience that a human being can have, the ultimate grounding, which is a groundless grounding, zero, the source. It's so deep within you that it's no longer human, no longer personal. It's an inhuman experience that paradoxically nurtures, fulfills, and purifies all your human parts. If gone points us to the ultimately primordial experience that any human being can have, so primordial that it's not even human, there must also be the second most primordial experience. There is, and that experience is definitely a human experience. It's the experience of the chaotic emotion of the infant. Gone may lead to contact with this state of primordial, chaotic body emotion. Each vanishing is like a little death. When you come back, it is like being born again. You come back as an infant, with an infant body, full of freaked out, chaotic body emotion, just like when you were an infant. And that's really good, because then you're working with the very first thing that separated you from your spiritual source, the thing that splits you off from the source in the first hours and days and weeks of life. You're working with the normally subliminal limbic undercurrent of experience. But back then, you were a helpless infant, and now you're an adult meditator. As an adult meditator, you're much better off than an ordinary adult. You're a super adult, because you have techniques you can apply to the situation. This allows you to work through that primordial level of infantile freakout, and that original primordial infantile freakout is at the core of all subsequent freakout experiences a person has, as a child, as a teenager, as an adult, and as an aging senior. All emotional freakout is based in this original primordial freakout of the infant, and you can work through it by loving it to death, knowing it to death. It's purgatorial. It unties some of the deepest knots in your soul. The first thing that happens after zero breaks apart is that expansion and contraction pull in opposite directions. This separation creates a cleft of pure space. But because expansion is pushing out and contraction is pulling in, that space vibrates. And it vibrates into the pure heat of feel. That pure heat of body emotion is the penultimate primordium of self. The ultimate primordium of self is the space itself, born in the cleft between expansion and contraction. And the source of that space is spaceless, zero. But the first thing that is in some sense personal is that pure heat of body emotion. If you can detect and complete it, then the part of it that came from the expansion goes back to expansion, and the part that came from contraction goes back to contraction. The freaked out infant becomes the activity of expansion and contraction. And when expansion and contraction reunite, mutually cancel and vanish, you are that vanishing, that zero, that gone. If you participate in that enough times, you will completely reparent yourself and arise as a true superadult, an enlightened adult.